This message comes from NPR sponsor Viore, a new perspective on performance apparel. Clothing designed with premium fabrics, built to move in, styled for life. For 20% off your first purchase, go to viore.com/NPR.
You're listening to the 1A Podcast. I'm Jen White, and this is In Case You Missed It, where we bring you some of the week's most important conversations you might have missed. As millions of Muslims around the world begin observing the holy month of Ramadan, we turn to Gaza. Ceasefire talks are at a standstill, with hunger worsening across the territory and no end in sight to the five-month-old Israel-Hamas war. In the city of Rafah, war-weary Palestinians shopped at an open-air market to find whatever they could.
I came here to buy, but I can't find anything to buy. There's nothing. No dates or milk or anything. One can't find anything for their children. All these canned goods are full of germs that infect the stomach. We need vegetables and fruits to feed our children because they've weakened and died from hunger.
That was Sufyan al-Yazji. He was displaced from Gaza City. More than 31,100 people have been killed in Gaza since the war started October 7th. That latest tally is from Gaza's health ministry. More than two-thirds of those killed in ongoing airstrikes from Israel are women and children. The UN says Gaza's entire population of 2.3 million people is in a food crisis, with 576,000 people at catastrophic or starvation levels. A declaration of famine is expected soon. Israel says around 1,200 people were killed on October 7th when Hamas attacked communities in the south of the country. About half of the approximately 250 Israeli hostages taken that day remain captive. Israel says some have died. We discussed the latest with Steve Sosaby. He's the co-founder of the Palestine Children's Relief Fund and the co-founder and head of Heal Palestine. That's an aid organization on the ground in Gaza providing supplies and medical relief. Steve joins us after the break. Stay with us.
This message comes from Capital One, offering commercial solutions you can bank on. Now more than ever, your business faces unique challenges and opportunities. That's why Capital One offers a comprehensive suite of financial services, all tailored to your short and long-term goals. Backed by the strength and stability of a top 10 commercial bank, their dedicated experts work with you to build lasting success. Explore the possibilities at CapitalOne.com/commercial, a member FDIC.
Support for NPR and the following message come from IXL Online. Is your child asking questions on their homework you don't feel equipped to answer? IXL Learning uses advanced algorithms to give the right help to each kid, no matter the age or personality. One subscription gets you everything. One site for all the kids in your home, pre-K to 12th grade. Make an impact on your child's learning. Get IXL now. And NPR listeners can get an exclusive 20% off IXL membership when they sign up today at IXL.com/NPR.
This message comes from NPR sponsor Charles Schwab with its original podcast, On Investing. Each week, you'll get thoughtful, in-depth analysis of both the stock and the bond markets. Listen today and subscribe at Schwab.com/OnInvesting or wherever you get your podcasts. This message comes from NPR sponsor Teladoc Health. There are lots of reasons for wanting to be healthy. Family, work, living a fuller life. Teladoc Health understands. Whether you have diabetes, high blood pressure, or just need to manage your weight, Teladoc Health can help. Visit teladochealth.com/whatsyourwhy for more information. That's teladochealth.com/whatsyourwhy.
This message comes from NPR sponsor Charles Schwab with their original podcast, Choiceology. Hosted by Katie Milkman, an award-winning behavioral scientist and author of the best-selling book, How to Change. Choiceology is a show about the psychology and economics behind people's decisions. Hear true stories from Nobel laureates, authors, athletes, and more about why people do the things they do. Download the latest episode and subscribe at schwab.com/podcast or wherever you listen.
Steve, welcome back to the program.
Thank you for having me.
Palestinians in Gaza have begun fasting for the holy month of Ramadan today in the shadow of war. What have you heard about the mood during what would normally be a joyous time in Gaza?
I think it's a combination of fear, exhaustion, anxiety, and just ongoing suffering overall among the entire population. People are just exhausted. It's been nearly 6 months of just relentless attacks. People aren't sleeping. There's the constant fear of death that everybody shares. And the scarcity of food, of medicine, of medical care, of shelter, of clean water, of the basic necessities for everybody to survive is complete. There are no rich people in Gaza anymore. There are just people who are struggling every day just to survive and get the basic necessities. And that's throughout the entire population. Of course, it's much worse in the north, where the aid organizations like our own are unable to reach and provide the kind of direct humanitarian services that people absolutely require. So the situation there is much worse. But throughout Gaza, the situation is quite dire. That includes the south as well.
When we last spoke in January, you were headed to Gaza with HEAL. And again, this is an organization focused on providing aid to Palestinian youth. And the plan was to try to provide more aid to those blockaded in the south of the Strip. To start, tell us about the process and challenges of trying to enter Gaza as an aid worker.
It's hugely challenging for a variety of different reasons. I mean, obviously, the only people who are really getting in these days are people who run organizations like ours or medical staff, volunteers who are going to provide direct medical services for people on the ground. But the bigger challenge is getting aid in. There's literally thousands of trucks and containers waiting to enter Gaza with food, with medication, with shelter, with clean water, with other basic necessities which people are being deprived of and has resulted in children dying from dehydration and from starvation, particularly in the north. And it's just extremely difficult and hard to understand why this aid is not getting in. We understand there is a process for security to ensure that only humanitarian aid is getting in, but prior to October 7th, 500 trucks were entering Gaza, going through the same security checks that are required today. But now only a few dozen trucks a day at the most are getting in, and obviously, and sometimes much less than that. And the need is much greater now than it was prior to October 7th because you have nearly 90% of the population displaced and the entire population depending on international aid to survive, to have food and clean water. Not being able to get that aid in is extremely frustrating. And then not also in our organization, we bring injured patients out. We have 5 injured children in the United States now being treated for free. We have dozens and dozens of more kids who we need to get out for medical care. And there's literally 6,000 patients. It's already been estimated 6,000 patients in Gaza who have traumatic injuries that need to come out for medical care because the health system there has collapsed. The overall, it's just extremely difficult and extremely challenging to answer your question. For aid organizations that have the resources and have the willingness and have the ability to both provide that aid and then distribute it in a professional, organized manner on the ground, to not be able to get that aid in and to enable people to have access to what they need to survive.
As you mentioned, 2 hospitals in northern Gaza report at least 20 people, mostly children, have died from malnutrition and dehydration. In Rafah, in the south, another hospital reports 16 babies have died in the past several weeks from causes related to malnutrition. Despite this, the situation has not officially been declared a famine. What more can you tell us about the rates of hunger and starvation in Gaza right now?
Well, as I said, northern Gaza has a different condition at the moment than the southern part simply because aid cannot reach there. And the limited aid that does come in for the most part is just in the central and southern part of Gaza, Khan Yunis, Rafah, and then the central part, which is 4 refugee camps. But in the northern part, it's cut off. So that's really where you're seeing the huge impact of hunger and which could be described, I think, famine. Definitely for the population up there. We've seen the flour massacre 10 days ago at the Nablusi roundabout in the north, where over 100 people were killed trying to obtain just basic necessities of flour and humanitarian aid that was shipped in on trucks. People are so desperate. You've seen these airdrops and just thousands of people converging on them, and even people being killed by parachutes not opening, but because whenever they see planes overhead, they are trying their best to get access to those supplies. That's an indication of how desperate people are and how absolutely the situation is so absolutely dire that the entire population is struggling just to get the basic necessities of clean water and food. So I think it's clear to say that the situation is so completely out of control as far as people having access to the basic necessities that if it's not declared a famine now, it's certainly on the brink of one. I don't know how that what the actual criteria would be to declare it a famine, but when you have already 24 children dying of starvation, which is a man-made condition, it's not a result of any kind of natural disaster. There's literally hundreds of trucks a mile away from the Rafah crossing with food that could feed the starving people in Gaza. So I don't understand why there can't be a better system in place, particularly organized by the United States or the United Nations, that would facilitate the access of food and water into the Gaza Strip to ensure that no child is dying of starvation or dehydration as a result of this closure and blockade.
Well, on Saturday, President Biden spoke to MSNBC's The Saturday Show, and here's some of what he said.
He has a right to defend Israel, a right to continue to pursue Hamas, but he must pay more attention to the innocent lives being lost as a consequence of the actions taken. He's hurting, in my view, he's hurting Israel more than helping Israel by making the rest of the world, it's contrary to what Israel stands for. And I think it's a big mistake. So I want to see a ceasefire. And I'm starting with a major, major exchange of prisoners for a 6-week period. We're going into Ramadan. It should be nothing happening. And we should build off of that ceasefire.
Steve, as a humanitarian worker, what's your reaction to that messaging from the president this weekend?
It's confusing, I think, for all of us who know that the United States is the main supplier of military aid to Israel and is providing the weapons that have resulted in over 13,000 children being killed since October 7th in Israel or in Gaza, and probably a much higher number because so many bodies are still buried under the rubble. And in addition to that, we have a huge number of children who are dying from other complications, which are not related to trauma, but certainly related to the situation on the ground in Gaza, kids who are dying from cancer, from heart disease, from other kind of complications, which could be prevented and those lives could be saved. So it's confusing for us to see and to hear the most powerful leader in the world, in the free world, President Biden, who has the leverage, given that we give Israel so much money every year, billions and billions of dollars, both in weapons and in cash, taxpayer money, not being able to have a bigger influence on particularly the humanitarian issue of just getting trucks of food into Gaza. Why is that so difficult for the President of the United States to ensure that our aid gets in and not has to be dropped by an airplane? It's kind of embarrassing. And I can tell you, for the people in Gaza, they don't see this as an act of kindness on the part of the United States. It's a sign of weakness for the people of Gaza to see the most powerful country in the world not being able to get them aid in a more organized and efficient manner than by airdrops that are landing in the sea or landing on top of people who, when the parachutes don't open, and killing innocent children and falling far short from what the needs are of the population. It's just a drop in the sea. I mean, hate to use that analogy. When it comes to what is actually needed, obviously, because people are still, there's still extreme famine, extreme hunger, extreme incidents of starvation and people dying on the ground in northern Gaza and in Gaza itself that the United States could easily resolve in one day by, opening the borders and ensuring that all of those trucks that are sitting on the Egyptian side have access to the people in need.
That's Steve Sosabi. He's the co-founder of the Palestine Children's Relief Fund. He's also the co-founder and current head of Heal Palestine. That's an aid organization on the ground in Gaza providing supplies and medical relief. Steve, thanks for joining us, and I hope we can check in again soon.
You're welcome. Thank you.
This program comes to you from WAMU, part of American University in Washington, distributed by NPR. I'm Jen White. Thanks for listening, and we'll talk more soon. This is 1A.
This message comes from NPR sponsor Elastic. Over 50% of Fortune 500 companies use Elastic to help them make insightful and impactful decisions at speed with Search AI, taking your data into the future. Learn how at searchpowered.elastic.co. Support for NPR and the following message come from Rosetta Stone, the perfect app to achieve your language learning goals no matter how busy your schedule gets. It's designed to maximize study time with immersive 10-minute lessons and audio practice for your commute. Plus, tailor your learning plan for specific objectives like travel. Get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off and unlimited access to 25 language courses. Learn more at rosettastone.com/NPR.
All that sitting and swiping, your body is adapting to your technology. Learn how and what you can do about it.
I really felt like the cloud in my brain kind of dissipated. Once I started realizing what a difference these little breaks were making, there's no turning back for me.
Take NPR's Body Electric Challenge. Listen to the series wherever you get your podcasts.